Here's Captain Flint. I call my parrot Captain Flint, after the famous buccaneer. Here's Captain Flint predicting success to our voyage. Wasn't you, Captain? And the parrot would say with great rapidity, pieces of eight, pieces of eight, till you wondered that it was not out of breath, or till John threw his handkerchief over the cage. Now that bird, he would say, is, maybe, 200 years old, Hawkins. They live for most ever. And if anybody's seen more wickedness, it must be the devil himself. She's sailed with England, the great Cap'n England, the pirate. She's been at Madagascar, and Suriname, and Providence, and Portobello. She was at the fishing up of the wrecked plate ships. It's there she learned pieces of eight. And little wonder, 350,000 of 'em, Hawkins. She was at the boarding of the Viceroy of the Indies, out of Goa, she was. And to look at her, you would think she was a baby. But you smelt powder, didn't you, Cap'n? Stand by to go about, the parrot would scream. Ah, she's a handsome craft, she is, the cook would say, and give her sugar from his pocket, and then the bird would peck at the bars and swear straight on, passing belief for wickedness. There, John would add, you can't touch pitch and not be mucked, lad. Here's this old, innocent bird of mine, swearing blue fire, and none the wiser. She would swear the same in a manner of speaking before the chaplain. And John would touch his forelock with a solemn way he had that made me think he was the best of men. In the meantime, Squire and Captain Smollett were still on pretty distant terms with one another. The Squire made no bones about the matter. He despised the Captain. The Captain, on his part, never spoke but when he was spoken to, and then sharp and short and dry, and not a word wasted. He owned, when driven into a corner, that he seemed to have been wrong about the crew, that some of them were as brisk as he wanted to see, and all had behaved fairly well. As for the ship, he had taken a downright fancy to her. She'll lie a point nearer the wind than a man has a right to expect of his own married wife, sir. But, he would add, all I say is we're not home again, and I don't like the cruise. The Squire, at this, would turn away and march up and down the deck, chin in the air. A trifle more of that man, he would say, and I shall explode. We had some heavy weather, which only proved the qualities of the Hispaniola. Every man on board seemed well content, and they must have been hard to please if they had been otherwise, for it is my belief that there was never a ship's company so spoiled since Noah put out to sea. Double grog was going on the least excuse. If the Squire heard that it was any man's birthday, and always a barrel of apples standing broached in the waist, for anyone to help himself that had a fancy. Never knew good come of it yet, the captain said to Dr. Livesey. Spoiled hands make devils, that's my belief. But good did come of the apple barrel, as you shall hear, for if it had not been for that, we should have had no note of warning, and might all have perished by the hand of treachery. This was how it came about. We had run up the trades to get wind of the island we were after. I am not allowed to be more plain. And now we were running down for it with a bright lookout day and night. It was about the last day of our outward voyage, by the largest computation. Sometime that night, or at latest, before noon on the morrow, we should sight the Treasure Island. We were heading south-southwest, and had a steady breeze, a beam, and a quiet sea. The Hispaniola rolled steadily, dipping now and then with a whiff of spray. All was drawing aloft, every one was in the bravest spirits, because we were now so near an end of the first part of our adventure. Now, just after sundown, when all my work was over and I was on my way to my berth, it occurred to me that I should like an apple. I ran on deck. The watch was all forward, looking out for the island. The man at the helm was watching the luff of the sail and whistling away gently to himself. And that was only sound except the swish of the sea against the bows and around the sides of the ship. In I got bodily into the apple barrel and found that there was scarcely an apple left, but sitting down there in the dark, what with the sound of the waters and the rocking movement of the ship, I had either fallen asleep or was on the point of doing so when a heavy man sat down with a clash close by. The barrel shook as he leaned his shoulders against it, and I was just about to jump up when the man began to speak. It was Silver's voice, and before I had heard a dozen words, I would not have shown myself for all the world, but lay there, trembling and listening, in the extreme fear of curiosity, for from these dozen words I understood that the lives of all the honest men aboard depended upon me alone.